Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, 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 and welcome. This is Talk the Plank, episode 56, a podcast on SB Nation's Bucks Dugout. I'm your host, Nathan Hirsch, joined, as always, by Jake Slobodnik. And we have a guest today. Jake, what's going on?
Well, what's going on is we got one of the new faces to the Pirates media realm joining us today. His name, Justice De Los Santos, coming to us from sunny Bradenton, Florida. And he is the envy of our eye today because I'm in Loretto, Pennsylvania. That's currently 18 degrees right now. So I'm envying the hell out of him. But Justice, thank you for coming on and taking some time and talking the plank with us, man. It's good to have you.
Appreciate y'all for having me. And yeah, it is a, you know, I said before we started recording that I prefer the cold weather, but 18 degrees, you know, I don't know about that. I'm from California where it's like 65 degrees all the time. So that's a little, that might be pushing it a little bit.
Well, get ready, because when you come back to Pennsylvania, it's going to be a little chilly for the first few months. So
for sure.
Shout out. I want to give a quick shout out to my homie Micah, because when I was making the drive across country, I didn't have like a proper winter coat. Like I had like, I would throw on a hoodie and then I would throw on like another jacket on top of that. But like not like a proper like, hey, it's like 17 degrees outside. You should have something further. And honestly, if I didn't have that, I don't know if I would have finished the cross country trek. So shout out to my homie Micah.
Yeah, you're probably going to need that in Pittsburgh throughout April, at least once or twice, seeing how things are now. We have the classic Pittsburgh spring going where it's going to be 40 today, maybe 70 tomorrow, and then by the weekend, it might be snowing again. We'll see.
There it is.
Yeah, all right. So let's talk some Pirates then. Justice, you are new on the Pirates beat and writing at MLB.com, which is awesome. I guess we could just start off with some first impressions of Pirates camp down there in Bradenton. What's kind of standing out to you? And you could just start there.
Yeah, you know, obviously coming onto the beat for the first time, you see a lot of these guys in terms of, you know, their stats, in terms of their reputation. You know, you do as much reading as possible, but it's one thing to read upon these guys, but it's another thing to actually see it. And there have been a couple guys who have kind of caught my attention, both throughout games, both throughout camp. The first guy is someone that probably not going to be the opening day starter, but he's probably going to be the second just based on way things line up, is Mitch Keller. And even before I was hired to MLB.com, I saw the viral bullpen and I was like, oh, that is a he's like pumping 97, 98, 99, 100. According to his bullpen catcher, because I wrote a story about Keller and I got to talk to the person who caught that bullpen. He said he touched 102. And so it's one thing to see that in an Instagram post. It's another thing to see it in a game, in live competition, and just to see him lighting up the radar gun. One of the stats that I threw out after his second game is that in his first three seasons combined, Mitch Keller had 41 pitches that were 97 miles per hour or faster. Two games this spring, he's thrown 21. So the work that he was doing with Tread Athletics has translated into in-game action, and I'm really excited to see him, you know, over the course of a season, see how that kind of translates, you know, once you're consistently facing that major league competition. And let's be real, the other one's O'Neill Cruz, the person who I have learned I should I should probably be more careful when I tweet out anything O'Neill Cruz related, unless my mentions just get absolutely blown up. But, you know, it's one thing to be able to see him lighting up StatCast, reading the articles, seeing the highlights. It is another thing to witness it in person. And I know that, you know, the second home run that he hit in poor Charlotte against the Rays, there was no exit velocity, no distance, no nothing. But I can confirm as someone that was there, and I don't know if y'all saw Jimmy T's video, the one that he tweeted out, but that was me saying like Jesus Christ in the background.
Yeah.
That was me in the background, but because I felt like that was the only like appropriate reaction I could have. All I could say is like seeing that moment, it's just one of those swings when you hear it, when you see it, you're like, this is something that's special. This is something that one of like what five human beings on this earth are capable of doing. So in terms of guys who have stood out, in terms of guys who have caught my attention, those are definitely the two. And, you know, looking forward to the season, looking ahead towards the season, those can be, you know, a pair of guys that we're looking at in terms of Keller. I honestly wouldn't be shocked if, you know, if he's able to put it together, he's kind of in that all-star contention. And with O'Neill Cruz, I wouldn't be shocked if once he arrives with the big league team, whenever that might be, if he's somewhere in the rookie of the year condition. Not saying for sure they're going to be in either of those, but just based on what I've seen so far, those are definitely conversations that can be had. Again, you know, small sample size aside, that's, you know, just kind of based off what I've seen so far. And it's been fun to witness it so far.
Piggybacking to Keller a little bit, just watching some of the broadcasts, Greg Brown has sort of touched on what Keller has done this offseason to really improve himself. And one of the things that he talked about was the Kikuchi role. It's sort of a little bit of different footwork. Just in conversation with Mitch, what are some of the things that he's told you that he's really hammered on in terms of improvement this offseason, aside from maxing his velocity up?
Yeah, so I actually, in terms of the Kikuchi drill, that's actually something that I had talked to about with Devin Hayes, who Keller had worked with a lot at Tread Athletics in terms of, you know, providing some of that lower body mobility, some of that, you know, stability in that regard. But in terms of what he's been doing specifically, and sorry to anybody that's read the article that I wrote on this, but because there might be some overlap here. But prior to the 2020 season, what Keller had been doing was he had had a longer arm action. Then in the 2020 and 2021 season, he tried to shorten that arm action up, which if you look at the velocity numbers, there's kind of, you know, there's a little bit of a correlation there in terms of him shortening that arm action up and the actual velocity numbers. In his rookie season, I think he was sitting at like 95. Once he shorted that arm action, he was sitting like 93. And I think last season in particular, it was the slowest of his career. So in this offseason in particular, he abandoned the idea of wanting to shorten his arm action. And at Tread Athletics, his whole thing was re-lengthening that arm action, you know, among other things. And that's translated not only to better velocity, but it's translated into his secondary stuff playing better. One of the tidbits that really caught my attention when I was talking with Devin Hayes was that when they ran Keller's data, you know, his velocity, his spin rate, all that stuff, when they ran it through the Tread Athletics database, his comparison was a former Pirate, Gerrit Cole. And in some cases, some of his pitches actually had a higher rating than Gerrit Cole, just in terms of, you know, velocity, spin, and all that stuff. And when I asked Keller about that, he said, you know, leaderboards are cool. Being able to see his name next to a guy like Gerrit Cole. Another guy that was mentioned to me by Hayes was Tyler Glasnow in terms of just how his stuff plays. And while Keller said all that stuff is cool, you know, it's one thing to do that in a bullpen session where you're not facing live competition. It's another thing to do that against live competition and to consistently execute those pitches when it really matters most. And, you know, just in having those conversations with Keller, you know, he's a guy that's, you know, he's trying to be compared to Cole in the sense of like how the actual on-field results are transpiring rather than just in a bullpen session. So those are kind of the main things that I've discussed regarding Keller. And, you know, based on, you know, a 2-game sample size, and I believe he's pitching today as well, you know, it's just been fun to watch that translate into in-game action. And, you know, again, small sample size in mind, it feels like just like we're witnessing the foundations of what can be a breakout season.
Yeah, I kind of wonder because, like you said, small sample, and it is really encouraging. Obviously, Keller's fastball, it's a four seam. It doesn't have a lot of like horizontal or vertical movement per se, but a fastball at 99 plays much different than a four seam fastball at 93, 94. So I guess my question is, obviously now he looks awesome, but do you think that velocity is sustainable over the course of a full season as a starting pitcher? Because, you know, as a reliever, it could be easy to ramp it up when you only pitch 1 to 2 innings. But as a starter trying to go 5, 6 innings, do you think he'll be able to maybe not crack 100 every time, but kind of stay in that 97 plus velocity, level?
Yeah, projecting velocity is kind of an inexact science because you can point to guys like Jacob deGrom, Justin Verlander, who are able to reach back, you know, in the 6th, 7th, 8th inning and just really crank it up. But, you know, when we're talking, you know, those guys are inherently outliers, and I don't want to make that comparison. But when you kind of see where his velocity was sitting at in his rookie season, I believe it was 95 point something. I can't forget what it is. I think that it's going to be in terms of his velocity this year, I think it's going to sit in that range. It might be a tick or two higher, but I don't think it's going to be, you know, anything that's, you know, he's not going to be pumping. Like, I don't want to say he's going to be on like 100 all the time, but I could see a scenario where he's consistently and comfortably sitting in that 96 to 97 mile per hour range. And, you know, based again, his rookie season was quite a while ago back in 2019, but for him to be able to, you know, sit comfortably in that range, it's not something that was, you know, it's completely new. It's something that we've seen before, and, you know, it's going to oscillate on a start-to-start basis. It's going to oscillate based on how he's feeling. But from my vantage point, there doesn't seem to be anything inherently unsustainable. Maybe it's going to be like a tick or two lower compared to over the course of a full season compared to what we see over the course of spring. But I think that he's comfortably going to be sitting in that 96, 97 mile per hour range with his fastball. And one thing that I forgot to mention as well is that Keller has also been working on a new slurve. He said it was something that he tried out and he just felt comfortable with. He actually busted it out. I think he threw 7 or 8 of them during the game against the Phillies. I think some of them actually registered as curveballs, but that's also something to be mindful of Keller as well. Not just the velocity and also not just the secondary stuff as well. It's just his ability to throw that stuff over the plate, which has been the other main thing of how he's performed this spring. It's, you know, he's not just throwing, you know, 97, 98, 99, 100. He's always so throwing it over the plate. He's also commanding it very well.
Well, mixing speeds, changing locations. It's what Mitch Keller is trying to do to bring back that success factor that he had back in the minor leagues. But I want to step away from the player talk a little bit and talk about you a little bit, Justice. Obviously new to the Pirates beat on MLB.com, some big shoes to fill. The Pun King and Jake Krause he's moved on to bigger and better things with the MLB, and now you fill in his role. And I got a few, this is sort of like a 2-to-3-parter question. The first one is, who is Justice De Los Santos? What makes you unique, and do you have any puns, or do you have any puns lined up for the year as the season evolves?
To start with the last one, I have already irritated the ever living hell out of Jason, Alex, Kevin, Mike. I have irritated the ever living hell out of them with dad jokes. It has been like, that is my forte. That is like my bread and butter. They're sick of it. I'm trying to think of one off top that I've told them right now. I'm going to give myself like 10 seconds to try to think of one. But it is just there. Okay, so a couple days ago. I can't remember what it was. But Jason Mackey, he was holding a banana. I forgot why. I think he ate it. He's trying to throw it away. And I was like, hey, Jason, it looks like you're kind of in a slippery situation over there. And hey. He just looked at me with the most like, oh my God. They've already told me to like, they've been trying to call Jake for weeks and try to see if they can coax him back into coming on here. Cause what Jake has in the puns, I have in the dad jokes, and it is just quick. It is off top. The first part of that question, that is a very existential question. who is Justice De Los Santos?
Let's get real philosophical at 9:30 in the morning.
Yeah, let's get real. You know, I've barely been, you know, I have my coffee, barely anything in my stomach. Let's get real crazy with it. I'll provide like a little bit of background stuff. You know, I'm a very proud Filipino American, Filipino Irish as well. I like to sneak that in. That's like a very, it's a very unique combination just for me being out in the world. Every time I see someone else that's Filipino Irish, it's like, oh, there's more of us out there. But, you know, from the Bay Area, from Hercules, California, in particular, that's East Bay. Grew up watching a lot of Giants ball, grew up watching a lot of A's ball. I went to University of California, Berkeley, you know, a nice little school. You know, in terms of the athletics, it's kind of, I try not to speak of the athletics that much. But, you know, that's just kind of a brief taste of my background. I'm sorry, there's like a lot of different places like my mind can kind of go in terms of that. In terms of like the love of baseball, that's just like always been inherently ingrained. Here's a story I can give y'all. So I started loving baseball before I could even like properly conceive like two words like put together. And for my fourth birthday, which is the 2002, which is the year that the Giants went to the World Series and lost to the Angels, and Giants fans still have so much disdain for the Rally Monkey. It's a sensitive subject in the Bay. Don't ever bring it up. But my mom got me like this. It was the commemorative DVD for that season or for that whole year. And I just remember being like 4 years old, watching that thing on repeat. And there's just like so many memories from this like rant, like this season when I like I'm not even 5 years old ingrained. And I would like talk to my friends and I would be like, what do you mean you don't remember David Eckstein's walk-off grand slam against the Blue Jays when the Blue Jays were wearing like those, you know, the jerseys that were like they had the blue sleeves and like the white, like or the gray body. I was like, what do you mean you don't remember Kenny Lofton's walk-off single to send the Giants to the World Series? And so that's just kind of where I am for a love of baseball. In terms of Pirates, I'm not going to lie. A lot of my pre-existing Pirates knowledge comes from Barry Bonds. Yeah. Like, so, and I understand that's also kind of a sensitive subject.
Yeah.
I tweeted out a couple weeks ago, imagine if the Pirates had actually drafted Griffey, because I know that it because of the weird, like, AL-NL stuff, that the Pirates actually got stuck with the number two pick. And I think I tweeted something to the effect of, hey, if Griffey was in center field instead of Bonds, you think he would have listened instead of Andy Van Slyke to move in?
Probably.
in 92. So I'm not going to – I apologize if I'm triggering anybody right now, but that's just kind of where my knowledge comes from. I also have the memory of Jason Kendall, like, jumping over a catcher.
That was
I
nice.
I think it was the Twins game. But what was the second part of the question? I know this is a three-parter. I hit the corners.
What sort of – things do you bring that's unique to the Steel City? And just I know it's a very, very vague question, but just like, you know, it seems like everybody who comes in, they have a different thing about them that makes them unique. What makes you unique when you come to Pittsburgh? More philosophical.
I mean, just based on the way my based on the way my mentors are going, I guess it's got to be the swag, right?
I'd say so.
I think that might be a component. I remember the first video that I posted when I was wearing these glasses. I think it was very polarizing. Some people were like, I dig them. Some people were like, what, like, who the hell is this kid that's like coming through and wearing these glasses? And it's funny just because like when I was like growing up, I never considered myself someone that was like, oh yeah, I got the drip. I got the juice. I got the swag. Like none of those types of things. But I guess like early on in terms of, you know, I've been told that the California cool thing is real. And like it wasn't anything like I ever like tried to like explicitly do. Just I remember having a conversation with someone that like wasn't from the Bay and they were like, yeah, like that's a real thing. I'm like, oh, it is. So I guess that's like one element of it. I think the other aspect, and I touched upon it in the first one, is, you know, just being a Filipino American in this space, because, you know, if we're being quite honest, we don't see like a lot of, you know, Asian Americans in particular in the space, but Filipino Americans as well. I've had the blessing of having Mark Carrig over at The Athletic be a mentor to me, who's not just a Filipino American, but he also, this is some crazy stuff, he also went to high school with my sisters, like two of my three sisters, which that's just like a whole small world thing. Josh Tolentino as well, who covered the Rays for a year, Filipino American as well. But, you know, in terms of us being able to carve out, you know, a space in this arena, I would say that's one of the aspects as well. And, you know, as much as I, you know, enjoy covering ball, like that's one of those aspects where I'm always kind of gonna let that element of me shine. And, you know, whether it be my I think there's also something to be said about Filipino Americans from the Bay Area in particular. Like, we just, there's like a certain like kind of X factor to us. I don't know if X factor is the right word, but like the running joke is like you, there's like Filipinos and there's Filipinos from the Bay. So you kind of combine like those two elements. And I would say that, that's kind of the, I would say that's one of the things that makes me, I don't like to use the word unique. I don't think like I'm exactly a one of one or anything, but you know, makes me maybe a little different.
That's very cool. Have you gotten a chance to visit Pittsburgh at all?
I have. Since I drove cross country, it's been a blur just to like where I've been. Like, I think I've slept in like 8 or 9 different beds just beyond like B&Bs and hotels and like air mattresses and couches. It's been a lot since I've moved. Just to summarize that trip real quick. So I got hired in early February. I left on Valentine's Day. I started my cross country drive. I went from the Bay to Salt Lake City, Salt Lake to Cheyenne, Wyoming, Cheyenne, Wyoming to Omaha, Nebraska, Omaha, Nebraska to Chicago. I stayed there an extra day. From Chicago to Pittsburgh, I was in Pittsburgh for about 2 days. Then I went down to Bradenton for Pirate City for about a week. Then I came back to Pittsburgh, and this is in the middle of the lockout. So I just didn't, you know, in terms of long-term where I was going to be, I didn't really have like a tried and true idea. I locked down an apartment on March 10th. Not even 24 hours later, on March 11th, lockout ends. I'm on the first flight out to Florida, and now I've been in Florida for like the last two, 3 weeks. I don't even know. It's been jarring in that sense. But to answer the actual question, I have been able to spend a little time in Pittsburgh. Went to Permane's. I didn't have time to go to DeLuca's. Yeah. That's the spot that I'm trying to go to when I'm back. Commonplace Coffee. That's my spot. I got to go to White Whale Books. Where else? I went to Mount Washington, did a little walking over there, got to see.
That's where I preside.
There we go.
Yeah.
And honestly, every time I've driven through Fort Pitt, that's what it's called, right? Fort Pitt?
Yep, the tunnel.
Yep. Every time I've driven through that tunnel, it feels like a movie. Like, as beautiful as the Bay Area is, I don't think there's like one like kind of bridge or tunnel that can exactly replicate that feeling of when you drive through. And honestly, like I've only been there for about like maybe 10 days total, but I'm already falling in love with the city. It's like my type of city. Like I know a lot of people my age, they're attracted to like the New Yorks and the Los Angeleses, but like for me personally, that's like way too much going on. And I like just the feeling I'm at, like when I'm in the city, like it never feels like overwhelming. It feels very comforting to like be in that space.
That's a good way to put it. It feels like it's just enough of a city, but it's not too much to the point where it's overwhelming.
Right.
So, well, Justice, with that said, what are some things you're looking forward to when you finally get settled into Pittsburgh? You're not just there for a cup of coffee. Like, I mean, there's a lot of things to sort of take in along, or other than the beautiful scene over at PNC Park. But what are some things that you're looking forward to the most in Pittsburgh?
I'm looking forward to buying a mattress. that is like number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 for me right now. Just like I'm gonna pick out my like perfect little queen size bed and not have to, because like I have missed my bed back at home. Like it's one of those things that like you don't really understand until you leave. But like once I'm able to like settle into my apartment, that's like the biggest one of them. This is a kind of a story that kind of summarizes just how disorienting this entire endeavor has been. The first night I moved into my apartment, I forgot to buy a shower curtain. And so when I showered that, like my entire like bathroom was flooding. It was one of those moments I was like, oh my God, like this is new life, really. This is the dream right here. But I mean, the other aspect is, you know, there's a lot of games that I'm looking forward to. It's way down the line, but I'm looking forward to that first game when they go back to San Francisco. Just, I know how much can, you know, when you're away from home for a while and you go back home, like your kind of worldview changes. But I think in the short term, the one game that I'm really looking forward to right now is opening day. Cause it's one thing to, you know, have your first opening day. I'm going to have the opportunity to have that with my homie Katie Wu over at The Athletic. She covers the Cardinals. She's not exactly from the Bay Area proper. She's like a 10, about 5 to 10 miles outside of what we consider the Bay. But for all intents and purposes, let's just say it's two Asian American kids from the Bay Area who get to celebrate opening day together. And then you throw in Albert Pujols like being in the mix. Whether they go with a righty or a lefty, I think Pujols is going to be in the starting lineup. And considering the opening day starter might very well be Jose Quintana, that makes the decision all the easier. I'm looking forward to the home opener. Like, I've heard so many good things about the view. I've heard a lot of people say that PNC is the most beautiful park in the entire country. Coming from San Francisco Bay Area, you know, going to, I still call AT&T, I'm not going to call it Oracle. Going to games at AT&T as much as I did, I might have a little something to say about that, but, you know, I'm excited to be able to see that place in all its glory and, you know, take my laps around the stadium and, you know, try to recreate where Taylor Lautner was running in that one movie that took place in I forgot like what it was called, but I just remember like seeing that clip. So I'm excited for those elements as well. And, you know, just being able to, you know, visit like the cities that I'm going to have the opportunity to visit. Like, I've been to Wrigley before, but I haven't been to Wrigley as like a member of the press corps. And I'm also excited. This is like a sidebar. I'm excited to try Skyline Chili whenever I go to Cincinnati.
That's a take.
It's very polarizing. I know that, but I mean, I've never tried it. I have no horse in this race, so.
Gotta try it, yeah.
Until I've actually tried it, but, you know, there's just a lot of things that I'm looking forward to. I've also, this is like the really, the film photographer nerdy side of me, but I got some film developed yesterday of just like taking photos around, not just Lecom Park, but also some over at Pirate City, some over in Port Charlotte, Dunedin. So be on the lookout for that. I still firmly believe that I'm the best photographer among like all baseball beat reporters. And I know Anthony DiComo, Brian Hoke might got something to say about that, but you know, photo for photo, I'm ready to throw down. I got I got my archives ready to go.
Locked and loaded.
Shout out to Josh though. Josh, the team photographer. We've been trying to workshop a nickname for him for the last like 2 weeks. I've been calling him the $1 million man with the $1 million camera, but that's just too long.
We saw O'Neal Cruz too with the camera, putting in the camera work a little bit as well.
Yeah, he's coming for Josh's job. It was also Michael Perez. He had one of those moments earlier in camp too. And I cracked a joke with him. I was like, hey, looks like you're working on two different types of framing there.
Yeah, I see that. There's the dad jokes right there. We love to see that.
There we go.
Yeah, so I guess speaking of opening day, I saw your article predicting the opening day roster and didn't see O'Neal Cruz. We've talked about that at length on this podcast, just kind of accepting the fact that service time is probably going to be manipulated here or in the name of development. We'll see. But how ready do you think O'Neal Cruz is for the bigs?
I think that we're going to see O'Neal Cruz sometime in May. I don't think he's going to be in AAA for that long a period of time. And I know when I tweeted this out, you know, that whole thing of like, hey, you have to wonder whether this is good for his long-term development. I know a lot of people were bringing up names like Juan Soto and Fernando Tatis Jr., guys that skipped AAA entirely and went pretty much straight to the big leagues. And, you know, O'Neal Cruz wouldn't technically be in that boat. He did have a couple games at AAA. But the way that my mind kind of goes is that is the, and again, this is me kind of playing like the both sides argument here. It's that it, like guys like Tatis and Soto are kind of like the most extreme outliers possible when making that argument. The other way the kind of counter to that is Wander Franco, who's like the first 80 grade prospect since Mike Trout began the season in AAA as well. And then he goes on to have the fantastic season that he does. And the kind of question that I pose is if O'Neal Cruz plays 120 games this season, does it really truly matter whether that happens like from April 7th onward or from like May 1st onward? And I think there's validity to both sides of that. And one thing that I realized that I've never actually said on wax or actually ever tweeted out was that if it was up to me, I personally would have him on the opening day roster. And to kind of answer your question a little more directly, just and kind of allow him to get that seasoning, allow him to get that experience, especially with the team rebuilding as it is and with that eye towards the future. But, you know, I see the validity of both sides of it in terms of, you know, you want to get him a little more seasoning as well as AAA, allow him to work on some things, allow him to potentially work on some stuff in left field and even right field as well. But then there's also the argument of like he's hitting balls 100. He's doing things that Stanton and Judge do pretty consistently in terms of batted ball velocity. And, you know, we could like flip flop, like, but like we could both sides this thing all day. But that's just kind of where that's kind of like my more diplomatic answer on it. It's I can see the argument for O'Neill Cruz being on there. That's a valid argument. I also see the argument for O'Neill Cruz starting at AAA, which is the likeliest scenario, which there's also validity to that argument as well.
It's a painful process to talk about because you want to see Cruz in the bigs, but like you also got to play the numbers game essentially. And like you said, you know, juggle around his service time a little bit. And I mean, he's going to be up, like you said. Would you rather have 120 games, you know, in the early part of the season through the later part or at any point in the season? So I think, you know, just seeing him in the major leagues is definitely calming from a fan's perspective. And the fact that we're going to see him at all is pretty special. But along with Cruz, what are some other young names you think are going to crack the major league roster at some point this season? I mean, Roansy Contreras, a highly touted pitcher that stopped for a cup of coffee in Pittsburgh last year. And then some young outfield talent, Kanan Smith and Jigba, just comes to my mind, along with Cal Mitchell. Just who are some other names you think that we could see on the major league roster this season?
Yeah, Roansy Contreras is the one that you brought up. And I think of all of their kind of main prospects, I think he's one of the guys that's most in line for having a significant impact at the major league level this season outside of just a cup of coffee. And, you know, we saw the good in terms of, you know, the first pitch that he threw at spring training was pumping, I think it was like 99.4 miles per hour, something of that. But then we kind of see the other end of that where in his second outing, I think he gave up, it was either one or two home runs. And you kind of see the element of like there is, you know, some additional work and, you know, some additional seasoning that might be required on this end. But he's another guy that I can see, you know, making a significant amount of starts at the major league level. And then Smith and Jigba as well. He was one of those guys that over these last couple of days, you know, he was optioned to AAA Indianapolis after the Pirates loss over the Yankees. But just in his last two games, I was just really impressed by what he was able to do, you know, both in terms of power and speed against the Orioles in a game that was not televised. So y'all are just going to have to take our word that a home run did happen. He goes yard against the Orioles. And then the next day he smacks a, I think it's like 105 mile per hour single, and then steals second. I think he ended up with two steals. And, you know, with the outfield, I think it's hard to really nail down someone that might be in the outfield aside from Brian Reynolds for the entirety of this season. And I think Smith and Jigba is going to be one of those guys that we, you know, see getting a little run, see getting a little burn, you know, once we hit over the course of the season. And, you know, with those two guys in particular, it's going to be really fun to just like see how they can transform that opportunity into, you know, trying to lock down long-term success. Because the one thing about this team is that there is going to be opportunity this season and the season's coming forward for, you know, guys to really establish themselves and guys to earn some staying power here.
Yeah, kind of furthering the prospect talk, is there any prospects that have really stood out to you that probably won't make the majors this year, but they're maybe a few years away?
In terms of him actually making this guy I'm about to talk about, in terms of him actually making the majors, I could see him getting his cup of coffee, but the reason I want to talk about him has nothing to do with actual baseball. I want to talk about Leover Peguero because he is just genuinely one of the most fun human beings to ever be around. Like, the way that I started my lead on the little piece I wrote about him is like, you don't have to see him to know he's there. You just hear him. And he has about like a 2.5-foot, 2-foot boom box that the second he gets in the locker room is just like bumping. And he's like one of those guys that like when he's around, he just keeps things loose. He keeps things fresh. He keeps things exciting. And, you know, just being able, it was actually funny, a small little story. I remember it being a Wednesday because I was wearing my Wu-Tang shirt, you know, Wu-Tang Wednesdays. And I was talking to Peguero and he saw my shirt and then he pulls out like a Wu-Tang shirt of his own. this dude right here. It was like the classic, like the yellow logo with the Wu-Tang symbol on it. But he's just one of those guys that's so much fun to be around. And, you know, he had a really fantastic all-around season. And I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, he's able to work his way up and get a cup of coffee himself at the big league level this season. Going down deeper into the farm system, someone that really caught my attention in camp was Andy Rodriguez. You know, I wrote a piece about him as well in terms of just the pure versatility that he has. And, you know, while he's primarily going to be a catcher – along with his secondaries being first base and left field. But this is a guy just based purely on the athleticism. It's almost like he doesn't have like the traditional catcher build where, you know, like it's someone that's kind of bulkier, someone that's a little more built. Like, he looks like someone that could play any position around the infield and play conceivably well. And, you know, we saw him taking grounders at second base at Pirate City. He's gotten time all around the infield. He's gotten time at all three outfield positions during his time in the minor leagues, whether he continues to get time there as well. He's even pitched 2/3 of a scoreless inning, which, you know, he's not going to pitch anytime soon, but just like the fact that he has that in his bag as well. And it's just going to be really interesting to see like his progression as well, because, you know, with Henry Davis being billed as the franchise cornerstone behind the plate, and if Henry Davis is able to make his way up through the minors and establish himself as that guy, Andy Rodriguez's ability to play all around the diamond, whether that be first base, left field, or even second base, or even third base, that's going to be a means of getting his bat in lineup. And there's even an argument to be made that just in terms of pure contact hitter, with all respect to Nick Gonzalez, there is an argument to be made there that Andy Rodriguez is like the best pure hitter in the organization among the prospects. Trying to think of one more to give y'all guys. Well, Tanaj Thomas told in my very first interview on the Pirates Beat said he was going to be better than Jacob DeGrom.
Okay, so, I love to hear that.
Yeah, that was like literally the very first interview over at Pirate City that we did that I did like on the Pirates Beat, and I'm like, oh, this is a
that.
welcome to the beat. But, you know, Thomas is one of those guys that has a very electrifying arm, and for him, it's a matter of being able to, you know, consistently command the strike zone, being able to consistently throw strikes, because the strikeout stuff is there. The secondary stuff is a little bit of a work in progress, but like, you know, just for him to have that confidence in himself, it's one of those guys that you have to, you know, just take a look at his numbers every once in a while and see where he's kind of at. So I would say those are some of the guys that I would be keeping an eye on. And then, you know, you have some of the higher prospects as well. Matt Frazier, the reigning Honus Wagner Player of the Year award winner. You do have Nick Gonzalez, who was fantastic last season. Someone's screaming behind me. Anyways.
It's Florida. And then
it is Florida. Oh, God, I have too many Florida stories already. Then you have, like, guys like... then guys like Quinn Priester as well. You know, Quinn Priester, he's talked about wanting to be one of those guys that's pitching in the biggest moments on the biggest stages. So there's a lot of guys when you look at this farm system that you're excited to watch, but those are some of the guys that I'm going to be keeping an eye on just as the season progresses, even if we don't see them over in Pittsburgh. And hey, I might even need to make a stop to Altoona. That level of the farm system is going to be so much fun to watch. Like, you could, like, I don't have an exact number in mind, but you might see, like, just by season's end, like, Andy Rodriguez, since he wanted to be there, Henry Davis can conceivably be there, Quinn Priester, Carmen Majinski. Just, there's going to be a lot of guys up there, and it's going to be a really fun team to watch. So I would just keep an eye out on that team in particular.
Well, let's narrow it down a little bit more. One of the biggest competitions this spring that is for the Pirates is the infield sort of look, especially the middle infield piece. Obviously, Kevin Newman, highly touted to return, but then the emergence of Cole Tucker. You've written about Diego Castillo and how well he's impressed. And I mean, there's reason to believe that he could possibly make the active roster this season. And then obviously just a few other, you know, crews, just to name another one. There's a lot of competition in the middle infield look. How do you think that's going to shape up at the beginning of the season and how it could change over the course of the season?
I think the joke with the Phillies is that they're composed entirely of DHs. And I think the joke with the Pirates is that they might just be composed entirely out of like middle infielders that can play all around the diamond. But, you know, Kevin Newman is the one. I think just kind of based on our conversation at Cruz, there's not much to delve into there. Although I don't know when this is going to go up, but I'm writing a story on Kevin Newman right now. And there's a cameo from another guy who was a defensive minded shortstop who, you know, had his struggles at the plate, a guy that was a Minnesota Twin for about 24 hours. So that's your little spoiler right there in terms of a voice that you'll hear in there. But in terms of second base, Cole Tucker's having an amazing spring as well. I don't know why we didn't have the exit velocity or distance for the home. I think we had the exit velocity. We didn't have the distance for the home run that he hit off Garrett Cole against the Yankees, but you know, just the way he's swinging the bat, the presence that he has in the plate. I'm gonna ask him about this. But when I was rewatching the home run against Cole, there was purely from a stance perspective. I need to clarify this purely from a stance perspective. There was it felt like a little Harper. And again, purely from a stance perspective, aggregators do not take this and run with it. But again, I'm gonna rewatch that. But that was just my initial impression of just kind of like the way he was loaded up in the box, and he's just been taking some great swings this spring. And you know, it's a big season for him.
Yeah.
You know, he the first couple seasons in the big leagues, just in terms of where the expectations were, if we're gonna be completely honest, like he's that level has not been kind of reached so far, and so this is a very big season for him. I can see him ending up in the starting second base role, especially just with the way he's been swinging the bat. And then, you know, the thing with opening day lineups is a lot of these guys, I can see them in multiple positions. Like I can see Tucker at second. I could also see Tucker. He actually had a cameo. It was just one inning, but he played left field on Sunday for one inning. Him and O'Neill Cruz swapped positions. And as a Pirate, he's never played left field. He's done it a couple times in the minors, but you know, that's something that I'm going to be looking out for as we kind of reach the final eight games of spring. And then to kind of round out the bench there in terms of guys that, you know, kind of fill in this middle infield role, we talked about Cruz. Diego Castillo has had one hell of a spring. He's primarily played second base and shortstop for the majority of his career, but we have seen a decent chunk of him at third base. And he's played really well at third base too. You know, in that game against the Orioles that wasn't televised, so again, you're going to have to take my word for it here. He made this really nice barehanded play. It was like a really slow chopper hit his way. Fields it on the bare hand, makes a throw over, and you're looking at this guy like, dang, this guy's only played like less than 20 games at third base. And so he possesses that versatility there. Michael Chavis, another guy that we could potentially see, you know, rounding out the bench, someone that can play multiple positions, first base, second base, a little bit of outfield. And then another guy, just in terms of purely versatility, I think in terms of guys to round out the bench, you'll be hard pressed to find someone that has like more gloves in his bag than Hoy Park. Just because when you're like looking at his, you know, where he played last year, he was second base, third base, short, left field, center field, right field. Like he's played all over the diamond. And with the rosters, you know, reportedly expanding to 28, that's one of those guys that's, you know, it's great to have him just because if you need to, especially with the condensed spring and especially as you want to make sure that these guys are 100 as close to 100% as they can be, having someone that can conceivably go out to any of those positions and hold his own defensively just makes things a lot easier in terms of, oh, hey, we need to get Brian Reynolds a blow today. Let's throw Hoy out in center field, and or let's throw like Greg Allen center field, and then we can, you know, move Park over to right field or things of that nature. Or, you know, Newman needs to get a blow, so maybe we shift Tucker to short and then we throw Park at second. So versatility, especially in today's game, is just so valuable. And that was part of the reason why I referenced Andy Rodriguez as I did. And so I think that this in terms of how the bench is going to round out, I kind of see it coming down to either Park or Castillo. And there are arguments to be made for both of those guys. Castillo has had the better spring, but Park kind of offers more of that versatility that I mentioned. And you know, it'll be interesting to see like over these next eight games, just if either of those guys can do anything to really lock down one of those last spots on the bench. And they're both on the 40-man roster, so that makes things a lot easier in terms of, hey, if we need to bring one of these guys up to the big league team, we don't have to DFA anyone.
Yeah. This is my last question, but yeah, kind of looking at the major league roster, I think it's filled with a lot of prove it guys that, you know, you don't want to say quad A type guys, but a lot of these guys, if they don't produce this year, it might be it for them in terms of getting starting opportunities. Guys like Park and Chavis and Cole Tucker, Kevin Newman. Do you have a favorite of any of those that you think could break out this season in a big way and like kind of, you know, put themselves in the mix for further future years to come for winning teams, hopefully?
Gotcha. I think among the guys that you mentioned, I would say, and I don't know if breakout kind of qualifies as the right word, but, you know, just in conversations that I've had and being able to watch him at the plate so far. And again, for listeners, I need you to hear me out when I say this. Hear me out for the entirety of what I'm saying. But I think the guy that comes to mind is Newman. And, you know, it's one thing, you look at the swing change, he's a little more straightened up, the hands are lower, which gives him a lot more time in the plate. And he's had some very impressive swings of the bat so far during spring. And I know people are going to come with the counter argument. Oh, he hit 600 last spring and then look what happened. And yes, I'm very cognizant that, you know, this is spring training, that this isn't, you know, a full season. But again, in the untelevised game against the Orioles that I'm going to mention for like the 50th time, the double that he hit was about a 390-foot, you know, one hop the wall type blast. And, you know, again, small sample size, that's just one at bat. But I've just been very impressed with him on that side in that realm. And the thing that I always kind of reiterate with Newman is that even with him having a 54 WRC plus last season, even with him having a 574 OPS last season, which both were the lowest in the majors, he still wasn't a net negative player, at least by Fangraphs. I'm looking at Fangraphs, not Baseball Reference. And that was just because of what he was able to do defensively, is, you know, a little bit of base running as well, but that's just what he was able to do defensively. If you look at Newman's, you know, first couple seasons defensively, he was a net negative. Like when you look at his, you know, outs above average, when you look at his defensive run saved, I think by outs above average, he was like 8th, 9th percentile in 2019, 2020. And then last season, he's 81st. And that's like, that's not an easy jump to make, to go from one of the worst defenders, like one of the worst defensive shortstops in baseball, to one of the better ones. That's not an easy jump to make. And again, like hitting and fielding, they're not in the same realm of difficulty, because nothing is more difficult in the four major American sports than hitting a 98 mile per hour fastball that's elevated. But just in the conversations that I've had and seeing his swing change so far, there, I have some hope for optimism. Am I saying he's going to hit like 400? No, that's not what I'm saying there. But I could very much easily see a season in which, regardless of where kind of Cruz falls into this equation, I could very conceivably see a season where he's a, you know, a two and a half, you know, by F4, 2.5 WAR guy. And
kind of like 2019.
Kind of like 2019. I think that, you know, I wouldn't, you know, clamor. I saw someone like clamoring, saying like he's going to hit like 15 home runs, steal 15 bases and going to be traded. I'm like, by the All-Star break. And I was like, that's a little much. But I could conceivably see a season where he's either, you know, gets back to the, you know, hitting double figures in home runs, or if not there, somewhere close. And then also providing the defense that he's provided last season as well. And, you know, if Kevin Newman has a season where he's in like 2.5 in the 3F4 range, that's a successful season. Yeah, and then he's still someone that you have under team control as well. And then you can kind of, with Cruz, you can figure some stuff out as well, whether that be, you know, moving him to second base. That'd probably be like the primary option if you wanted to keep him in the lineup. But that's kind of where my mind goes in terms of guys that are poised to have a solid season, and that I could conceivably see having a season of that caliber.
I see it didn't take long for the Pittsburgh faithful to show you just the thought process behind players. You know, you do good and you get shipped off. I see it hasn't taken too long for you to see.
It hasn't. And I mean, that's something that I'm cognizant of as well, in that this is a rebuilding team. And there are some guys on this roster that I could see like having a really good first half of the season and being able to command like a piece at the deadline. And, you know, Jose Quintana might be one of those guys. Yoshi Tsutsugo might be one of those guys if they play well over the course of the first half. Because, again, let's be real, this is a rebuilding team. The eyes towards the future. It's get these guys into the system as much as you can. But that one in particular, I was like, I know Fangraphs has this thing where, like, when they're projecting players, it's like they're 99th percentile out, or their 90th percentile outcome, their 80th. That is a 90th percentile outcome by the deadline too. Like, and that's not to say that Kevin Newman couldn't conceivably do it. I'm just saying, like, these are like really, if this is your expectation, then this is like, you know, let's not throw the kitchen sink of expectations at the guy.
Yeah, it's a hornet's nest of emotion, but I'll leave off on this. When we talk about the players, we talk about the thought processes from around the team. I don't know how much access you've had to talk to Derek Shelton over the past few weeks, but in any conversation you have, what are some things that you're picking up from him on his expectations for the season?
Not only have I talked to him pretty much either before or every game, but he witnessed me fumble my words in a way that I've never fumbled my words before when talking to a manager or coach. I forgot what the question was, but my brain just like broke down in the middle of a question. So I think just based off that alone, he's kind of got, we've gotten to know each other a little well, but I think that there hasn't been like a question directly linked to, you know, what are the firm and hard expectations? I wish I'd chosen my words better with that in terms of what the expectations are in terms of this season, but you know, just kind of based on where I'm gauging this season personally, and you know, not to try to put thoughts into his mind, but I think it's, you know, you get your young guys up when you can, and you, you know, you see what you have going forward. And I think that's just going to be the theme of this team. And, you know, you're, this is a team that's looking forward to 2024, 2025 in terms of being able to contend. And, you know what you have in Reynolds, you know what you have in Hayes. And then from there, it's just kind of seeing like, who are these guys that can be with this team a couple years down the road, who can be consistent contributors? And, you know, a guy like Keller, who I mentioned, like that's a guy like that's, you know, in terms of if he's able to have a successful season, that's someone that you can look for a couple years down the line. Same thing with O'Neal Cruz. And, you know, same thing with even a guy like Ronzi Contreras, even Leo Peguero, if he's able to make it up this season. So in terms of the pure wins and losses, that's one thing. But I think that above all else, it's more, you know, who are the guys that are going to be with us? Who are the guys that are going to be able to push us to that next level? Who are the guys that are going to get us into that, you know, in the conversation and then into contention and then contending? Like, who are those guys going to be? And that's going to, more than, this isn't anything groundbreaking here, but more than the wins and losses, that's going to kind of be the main thing that, at least that I kind of look forward to or kind of seek out in my first season on the beat, and hopefully a normal-ish season.
Yeah. One last thing for you. Do you personally have a wins prediction for the Pirates this year?
After what the Giants did last year, I have just completely abandoned all hope of trying to predict wins and losses. Because we're back in the... Because I spent a lot of time around the Giants last year just because of my role with MLB.com. And it felt like every game I was like, how... I would look at the roster and say, what is happening right now? But, you know, in terms of wins and losses, I don't have an exact number, but I will say this. Based off kind of what's happening in Cincinnati, I wouldn't be shocked if the Pirates aren't the team that, if the Pirates don't finish in last place.
That's fair.
Because the Reds are kind of, it is a very odd situation. Even Chicago too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, they bring in Marcus Stroman, and now I'm hearing, you know, again, I'm not tapped in or anything, but I'm just like seeing rumors that they might trade Wilson Contreras. And I'm like, what was the point of all that? So that's kind of like my half prediction. That's not really a prediction. That's just me saying stuff. It's like, I would not be shocked if the Pirates finish fourth or even third, just kind of based off the way the Central is kind of going. Because it's almost like, besides the Brewers and Cardinals, it's almost like, hey, does anyone actually want to win the Central?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good guess, I'd say, and definitely a more optimistic one than I've heard in recent weeks/years. So, yeah. Well, Justin, it's been really fun having you on the show. Thanks for talking the plank with us. Where can we find you on social media, man?
Y'all can find me at Just De Los Santos on Twitter. I am holding a personal war against Twitter because, one, they won't fit my entire name into the at, but then they also won't verify me. I've tried to submit for verification twice. I don't know why. Like, you know, my bylines are there. You know, I try sending my ID. For some reason, they're not taking it. But, you know, maybe that's just the war that I wage all season. Maybe I don't need the verification. Let that be a lesson to y'all. You don't need outside validation to be who you want to be on the inside. You don't need it. Although, you know, that being said, it would be kind of nice for them to, you know.
It'd be cool.
Throw me the check. Throw me the check.
You and Blind Madrid should form a Blind Madrid should form a coalition to try and rally together and get Twitter to verify both of you guys, because you guys are campaigning super hard to get that.
Hey, I'll ask him about it today. I tried trading sunglasses with him yesterday or the other day. He wasn't going for it, although he did get some respect. He said he was like he was the one that said those are the Joe Burrows.
Yeah, a little bit. They got some Joe Burrow vibes.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Burrow got the buffs, though. That's Detroit. Shout out to Detroit.
You can read Justice at MLB.com. covering the Pirates beat. Is there anything else you want to plug for us?
Photography. I got my photography on there.
You and Alex doing the show?
Yeah, me and Alex, I'll include him into the mix in my little post game recaps every now and then. I try not to, bother him too much, but I try to do my little recaps after every game. Some games are a little easier than others based on what happens. The last thing I want to say is, take care of yourselves, man. Drink your water, get your sleep. Eat. Make sure you're getting in your healthy meals. Take care of yourself. Take care of your mental health. And last piece of thing that I would say in terms of that is, don't be mad online. Just you don't have to be mad online. This is not y'all in particular. I'm just saying, I stopped trying to fight. I stopped trying to fight people on Twitter, and it made my mental health went through the roof.
Yeah, you can.
when I tweeted the whole Cruz thing a couple weeks back, it was a Sunday night. I was like, y'all getting mad on a Sunday night. This is a beautiful time of the. This is your last remnants of the weekend. Y'all being mad online. Just don't gotta be mad online.
Terrible.
this is not gonna happen. I'm just gonna say, be nice. Just try to be nice. But yeah, that's the last thing. Take care of your mental health. Make sure you're drinking your water. If you reach the end of this podcast, I want you to drink a glass of water and then tweet me with your glass of water. Stay hydrated. Stay hydrated, kings and queens and non-binary folk,
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. Well, hey, thank you so much for joining us. It's been really fun talking.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. If y'all ever want to have me back on, if I haven't annoyed y'all enough yet, y'all know how to find me.
Most definitely.
Yeah, we'll probably have you on mid-season or toward the end of the season, man. We'll recap later on.
For sure.
Yes, sir. It'll be fun when y'all bring up the clips, when y'all bring up my old audio, my old takes. Old takes exposed. we'll see what I got wrong and what I got right.
Hopefully
it's more the latter than the former.
Yes.
We'll see. That's the beautiful thing about sports. You never know what could happen.
Definitely.
All righty. Well, yeah, you could always follow Bucks Dugout on Twitter as well, at Bucks Dugout. We got some good stuff there. So everyone have a great rest of your day, and we'll be back next week talking some more Buckos. Peace out.